You've landed Inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Here we are again, Launch Street, and I couldn't be more honored that you are here. I just wanted to say thank you for taking the time to make Inside Launch Street a part of your day. It tells me you have a growth mindset, and I appreciate that about you. And speaking of growth mindset, be sure to go check out all the blogs and vlogs on our website. There is a lot of juicy innovation for you, for free. Feed that innovative mind, that growth mindset. Now, you've probably heard me say before, the mind is a lot like the body. While it's technically not a muscle, it kind of acts like one. That means the more innovation fuel and exercise you give it, the stronger it gets, just like your biceps. So go to our website, go to launchstreet.com, link is in the show notes, and give it the fuel it needs to be strong and powerful. So for today, do you ever feel like life is just a series of never-ending projects? If you do, you might be right. Our guest today, Antonio Nieto Rodriguez, is a project management champion, and he contends that everything we do is a project, everything from cleaning out the fridge to launching a new initiative to launching a new product. But he also showed me how most projects we do fail, are exhausting, or don't ever reach that sense of accomplishment because while projects are great, turns out how we're managing them is not. It's actually working against us. Antonio is the director of the Project Management Office at GlaxoSmithKline Vaccines, previously wrote The Focused Organization, and the founder of the Brightline Global Movement. Like I said, project management champion, and author of the new book, The Project Revolution, How to Succeed in a Project-Driven World. He's going to show us how to be more effective, more successful, and how to ignite innovation in the projects we work on, at work and in life. Let's do this. Antonio, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure, Tamara, to be in your show.
So tell me, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Well, actually, there's a few, but I'll tell you one which has marked a bit my career. And is when I was a kid, maybe 13 years old, I was extremely shy. I was very, very, very shy. I had panic to speak in public. I could not speak in class when the teacher were asking me. I was shaking. Words were not coming out of my mind. So I was very shy for until I was 19 or 20. And I said to myself, this has to change. I need to come out of this shyness. I need to learn to speak in public. And today, well, since years, I am able to speak to thousands of people in front of the stage teaching. So I think that has been one of my biggest challenge in the way I've developed. And I'm happy I made it.
You know, it's so funny that you say, not funny, interesting that you say that, because I think when I tell people that I do a lot of keynote speaking, I either get a, oh, that sounds fun, or, oh, like that must be the most horrible thing ever. Like with speaking in public, you either love it or you are petrified of it. There's no in between.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So being the world's champion, which is you call yourself and other people call you in project management. And let me just say for a second, I said this a little bit in the intro, but I'm super excited to dig into this because when I look at not just being a project manager as a role or a title, but how much of my life and my work is really based on completing projects to get to the next stage, to get to the next milestone, I think this conversation around project is really important to have. So I just wanted to make sure I reiterated that before we kept going. But Thank you, being the world champion of project management, how much from your view are our daily lives based around projects?
Well, excellent question, Tamara. I think almost everything in our daily lives is a project. We don't see them like that, but we're constantly in change. We're constantly in evolution. We have small projects. We have big projects in our lives. So I think if we would see our personal life as well as professional life as projects, and we would apply some of the principles that I try to explain in my book, then we would be, I think, a bit more successful and happier. So yes, I think almost everything in our lives has a starting and end. And I always talk about a project that many people have in their careers. There's always some time, which is a wedding. Mm-hmm. And I researched why a wedding you can plan 12 months in advance and is never late, and why an IT systems fails and is 3 times late and 3 months later. So what's the difference? Why are so people so engaged in a wedding project and not so much in other projects in their personal lives and others? So yes, the great question.
So I have to know then, because here's what I would assume some of the differences are. Okay. One is a wedding is public, meaning there are other people that you're accountable to, yes. Your guests.
Yeah.
So that would be one that I would guess. And the other one I would guess is it's very personal, right? This is your day, the one planned. Usually you're the one planning it, or you and the groom. Is that the difference between, you know, yes. I don't know, launching yes. a product and a wedding?
Yes, absolutely. You got two of the, I think, 3 or 4 key characteristics of a wedding. It's a commitment. It's a public statement. So projects yes. that are usually you have a public statement, you have committed to your regulators, to your clients. It's that deadline is much stronger than other deadlines that you can ignore or delay. The other thing is just personal. You're so engaged. You talk and you think about it every day. You talk to your partner. Mm-hmm. The communication is fluent. There's roles and responsibility. Some part is done by the woman, the man, the partners. So I think everything applies very well in that project. But what you highlight, Tamara, the engagement. Why are you so engaged in a wedding and not with your product? And how can you reach that engagement with your product and your project and your IT systems? That's what we're trying to achieve.
Well, you answered my next question, which was going to be, can I apply what works about something like a wedding or a birthday party to work, which it sounds like the answer is yes. Before we dig into how you do it well, I would love to get an example from you of a project that's gone off the rails and why it went off the rails. Because I think it's one of those things where you don't yeah. see it until you're done. Then you're like, oh, well, that didn't go well.
Well, there's many. I think myself in my career at work, for example, I've been in a few big mergers and in banking, and one of them collapsed terribly in the crisis, and I was head of the integration team. So that was a personal failure. Didn't depend on me, of course, only, but that was something that I just got swapped away from the crisis, and I didn't see it coming. Personally, I think a big failure for me was the first time I tried to write a book. I don't know if this is something you had that, Tamara, but it's very difficult to write a book. It's a project
yes.
which usually takes much more than you thought. It requires much more time than you thought. So if you don't have allocated enough time, it will no progress. So the first time of trying to publish a book, it was a complete mess and failure.
You know, that's a great, a very personal example really for me. So I just finished a book, and awesome. I will tell you that I set out to do the book originally and uh-huh. was really flailing. And then a publisher happened to find me and we oh. made a deal. And when that happened, wow, suddenly I'm accountable to someone else. And mm-hmm. I will tell you, like, it went on point and I turned it in on time. Interesting. And I'd missed my own personal deadlines like 4 months in a row. Just because, you know, you're kind of personally, I don't know. Yeah, it's personal. Let me ask you a question though on the kind of off the rails, which is kind of an extreme statement, but it seems like oftentimes it's a bunch of little things that just don't go well. Like, you know, it's almost like that old phrase, death by 1,000 cuts. And it's not that one massive thing, you know, derailed you. Do you find that sometimes it's those little things? And if yes, what are they and how do we look out for them?
Yeah, I think that's so true, Tamara. It's not just one milestone that you miss that you make your project derail. It's small things. I recently just got a book from Rita McGrath, and she says that's no melts on the border. So it's slowly, something happens very slowly and suddenly very fast. And that happens with projects too. So there's a part in the engagement and commitment and the morale of this on the people working in the project, which slowly, if you don't keep an eye on that, that will have a big impact. Another point is also the progress that you do. If you don't progress with your project and you don't show any results quickly, people will start complaining, will start saying, well, this project, we should have never started. Another common mistake is this small delays. So it's okay if you have one delay, but when you have 2, 3, 4, 5, then you lose credibility, you lose commitment. Absolutely. It's many small things that create a big failure of projects. And we can go detail later on a bit more in detail on that.
So if I am about to start a project with my team, big or small, maybe you can kind of give me one as an example to work off of. What's the first thing I need to do to ensure that at least I have a greater chance of success?
Well, I'll tell you two things maybe, which I've seen again and again. First, one of the biggest issues with projects is that very, very easy to start. It doesn't cost anything to start a project. You call a kickoff with your team, and tomorrow you say, let's kick off a project tomorrow because I saw this in the news or competition or I have this great idea. Everybody will show up in the kickoff. We love to start project. We love that. But then people will start realizing, well, actually don't have the time. Maybe it doesn't make sense. So people will not show up in the second meeting and the third meeting, you're alone. So starting projects, we make it too easy. And I think that's an important factor. You really need to think why you're doing a project. Project means commitment, means time, it's often money, resources. So I always ask people to be very clear on the purpose of the project by answering two questions. What's the problem we're trying to solve? What's the opportunity we're trying to capture? If you're not clear with that, don't even start. Don't even start. And it's not about building a system. A system project, that's nothing. You want to create something with that system. You want to capture more customers. You want to expand the experience with your customers. That's the why of a project. So if you don't have a why very clear, don't start. The second very important point I would recommend, Tamara, if you want to start with your project, check capacity. Check that people have the time. Check maybe that you need to stop other projects that they're not going as good as they are, should be, but make sure that there's availability, because we launch very quickly and then we realize, how do you put that in perspective with the rest of the work? So make sure that you do a sanity check on, do we have the time right now? Is it the right time for the team to work on that?
So let me ask you, I want to dig into both of these, one being the clarity and the other being capacity. So let's start with clarity, because I'm wondering if oftentimes we think we're clearer than we are, and maybe we're missing the purpose behind it, or maybe more of the emotion behind it, to kind of your comment about the wedding in the beginning. Like, it's not just, I've got to get the details for the wedding. It's like, this day has to go off because this is my special day and there are pictures and, you know,
exactly.
I could get all like girly about it, but you know what I'm talking about. So I'm going to give you an example. One of the, from something that we're working on, we've been creating this facilitator's guide and toolkit. So it's basically a self-contained toolkit for leaders who want to take their team through taking our innovation assessment and then through some type of team meeting where they understand more about each other, how to work better together, right? They can't bring me in necessarily, but they have a small meeting that they want to apply this to.
Yeah.
So we're finishing this project. I'm delayed, I'm not going to lie, in getting it done, because as I dig into it, I find there's more things that I need to consider, you know, how it is. It's like pulling back the layers of the onion. But I don't know that we were as clear about the project at the start as we should have been. So we said, I don't know that we put it in problem opportunity. So what our project goal, I guess we started with a goal. Our goal was, we need to finish this facilitator's guide and toolkit so people can purchase it. They're asking us for it. Mm-hmm. So will you help me figure out how would I turn that into a problem and an opportunity? Because I want us on Launch Street to really hear the language that helps really make this clear versus, I think, what I did, which is really just state an ambiguous goal.
Yeah, we often talk about deliverables, outcomes, instead of the really purpose of the project. So I think the key toolkit that you want to develop and for potential clients, increase your revenues, I think there's more than just the finance. I think you want it to truly to make sure that your clients are better at innovation, that they're more aware of the different profiles and how they work together. If you look at the opportunity in that sense, you go beyond the first or the second kind of purpose of this project, but the really the deep purpose is to, I believe, to help your customers to be better in innovation, and I'm sure you can phrase that better. That's a much stronger commitment. That's a much more engaging. People will engage more into that one than just we want to increase revenues.
That is, so I think for all of us on Launch Street, just using my delays as an example, that is a much different way to frame it. I was just taking notes as we were talking, thinking, wow, if I had set that out in the beginning of, hey, here's a problem we're solving and here's how we're helping the opportunity we're trying to capture is giving our customers what they need to help them be more innovative.
Exactly.
I think we probably would have, the team would have moved a lot faster. So that's,
exactly.
Yeah. And to your point, it's not about deliverables. It's about purpose.
Correct.
Up front. And purpose makes all the difference. And to your point earlier, that's what really gets you to engagement and motivation too, is the purpose, not the deliverable. The deliverable is just part of the process,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's just part of the process.
That's great. So let's talk about capacity, because you know what I've been hearing from a lot of people, and I'd love to hear your perspective on it, is I'm so tired of yet another initiative. They all have initiative fatigue because there are so many projects or initiatives, whatever you want to call them, that everybody's trying to juggle right now. And I think that's true across industries. So how do you, when you come up with something that you know needs to be a priority, how do you have that conversation with your team about capacity in a way that makes them feel good about it too, versus just, you've got time, right? I mean, people are hesitant to say no because we want our jobs.
No, this is a tough question, Tamara, and a problem that I see in small companies, startups, but also in the biggest corporations in the world. It's just very hard to find out the capacity that organizations can carry. I think the biggest mistake I see is that your companies don't reflect. They just assume because you launch a new project, people will just take it on board. And like you were saying, this initiative fatigue or change fatigue, it's there. It's a big issue. And that's, it's creating a lot of burnouts and that's not good. So I think my kind of rule of thumb is, if you start something, stop something. What are you going to make it difficult? Make it a trade-off. It's not easy. This looks better than what we're doing. This is going to be a big thing for us. So what are we ready to stop to make availability to go for this? If we really think this is better and has a lot of potential, we should be able to do it. And so I think it's a check, a discussion that you need to have with the team, saying, guys, I think this is something very important. One thing, Tamara, one point, I've analyzed hundreds of projects, thousands. The best projects have full-time dedicated people. So let's say the iPhone, for example, the Project Purple, the first time they created, 100% dedication of the team. And they were the best team in Apple at that time, 2004. Why companies are not able to put together a small team of their best resources for 6 months working on one project? If they really believe they want to make an impact, that's the extreme you need to go. I know that reality is a bit more challenging, and some people will be doing many things at the same time, but I think this is very important to reflect and be able to extract people from their day-to-day job into a project mood for acceleration, for getting results faster, for doing the project right. And somewhere in between, it's the right, the fine-tuning that you need to know.
Well, I really appreciate that though, Antonio, because I think oftentimes we just layer on stuff. And, you know, when you're talking, what I'm thinking is that is really the job of leadership, is to make sure that they're not stretching their people so thin with a bunch of projects that are barely going to move the needle when there's one or two. And maybe it's not always one, but, you know, there's a top list of priorities that are the ones that are actually going to make the impact. And I don't know if you've read that book, The One Thing.
Yes.
And yeah, love that book. And yeah, one of the things he said, and I'm going to paraphrase it and probably not get it 100% right, but one of the things he talked about that I really try to stick to is, you know, what's the one thing, if I do this, it makes all other things easier, go away, irrelevant, whatever he says it. But nice. I try to really work from that vantage point of, to your point of trade-offs, what's the, of all the things I could do, what's the one thing that's really going to move the needle versus all the little projects? And I do find that if I take that perspective you're talking about, those other projects tend to go away because I don't actually need them.
Exactly. Exactly. When I talk to executives, big corporations, and I ask them, tell me how many projects you have in this company. They say, I don't know. I don't have a clue. Some other executives will say, we have about 350. Other, I say, in the table, around the table. Other will say, no, we have 600. And I say, you can cut 50% of all the projects that you have. Nothing will happen. Nothing will happen. Your business will continue.
So I just realized that I don't know how many projects we have, and I just wrote down to do a project map wall so I even know what the hell's going on. And we're small, like, you know, relatively speaking, we're not a big, you know, Fortune 500 company, but it can get away from you.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a great, I really, we could probably do an entire podcast on trade-offs. And let me ask you this about trade-offs before. I want to dig into your books. It's really good, and talk about your project canvas. But before we head there, when you think about trade-offs, when you were thinking about the projects you've led, how do you determine which is a stronger priority? What are some of the criteria you go through?
Yeah, I think another great question. So you often assume that time is the number one priority. You have a fixed deadline. If the deadline is actually fixed because you have a commitment like we talked before, then absolutely I would make sure that we deliver that date. That means that I need to trade off a bit on the scope, meaning on the product, what I'm trying to develop. I will face the product instead of doing the 100%. I will say for that deadline, we can do 80%, and then we'll finish the 20% in a second phase. So when the deadline is absolutely a commitment and you cannot miss it, you have that brand as well that you don't want to lose with your customers, then you trade off often on the scope and you face it. And I think that's something that you need to discuss with the leadership and your customers if you're working.
Before you go on though, do you think with those deadlines, sometimes you should question the deadline and just confirm that, hey, this is the day we really need it by? You know, versus pushing to a date that's irrelevant.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair question. We put deadlines sometimes just to put pressure on the people. So I think that's a fair discussion that you need to have with the team when you set these goals. You don't want to put deadlines if there's nothing behind. That would just demotivate the people. So I think I see you know a lot, and you've been going through in a lot on as well in the past. So I love these questions because you're spot on.
That's my, could you tell that was my like frustration from 20 years ago coming out? Okay. So, but I do agree with you, right? When you have a deadline, you got to work to the deadline. So what are some of those other criteria you were mentioning?
Well, I think that the other important issue is always on the budget that you have to spend. So how much can you put forward and how much can you, you can go beyond the budget. So it's always about contingencies and can we get this extra? Because the problem with projects is very hard to estimate how much it's going to cost you. There's always studies that your initial budget will be anybody double or triple. So I think this is something that you need to anticipate. Keep an eye, and often the trade-offs will come from that side. Is we've reached a limit, or no, we can put 10% more in terms of budgets, and that will allow you to continue with the project. So trade-offs around the budget, because the estimation is so hard, it happens all the time.
Those are good. So let's dig into your book, The Project Revolution, How to Succeed in a Project-Driven World. And to what you were saying in the beginning, and I totally agree that basically we do projects. We may not realize it, but we do projects. And frankly, I think sometimes if I treated some of the smaller things I had to do as projects with you know, what problem am I solving and what's the opportunity I'm capturing and think about capacity, I'd probably manage my life a little bit better, not just my work. But one of the things that you write about is based around the project canvas. Can you give us kind of an overview of what are the elements of the Project Canvas and why it works?
Sure, sure. And this is something that people know Canvas. It's like a one pager, in other words. It's something to make simple. I think one of the challenges with project management has been that it's 50 years. And the challenge there is that project management, the methodologies, the methods were developed by engineers for engineers. So
right, and the rest of us are not.
very technical, and you get bored, and there's no connection to what you do. So my whole purpose with this book is that I believe everybody, like you said, Tamara, we do projects, and business-wise as well. But because project management is so technical and it's not appealing, people don't use it. They don't deep dive into it a bit to learn a few things. So my goal was to simplify, make it simpler. Anybody can use it. You can use it to plan your wedding. You can do it for your startup. And that's the canvas. That's the kind of history behind this one pager, the project canvas. And it has four dimensions. And it's using questions. It's the questions. If you can provide me an answer to that question and you feel comfortable with it and your team, that point is check. It's like a checklist. And you can go ahead if the majority of the questions are positive. If you miss half of them, don't even start. So let me just quickly go through the four dimensions. Yeah. It goes a bit more into detail, of course, but the first is the why, which we just covered, Tamara, this one. Of course, most of the project will need to have a return. So I'm not saying avoid doing a business case or a business plan to your project. My challenge there is that business plans or business case, they're always beautiful. I've never seen a pre...
Aren't they gorgeous?
They're all looking gorgeous. So.
And all the numbers are wonderful.
Yeah, so, okay, do the exercise more just to start getting some information, but it will not be your yes, go and go decision because they're all a bit, makeup. Mm-hmm. So the purpose will be the thing that drives you, that engages people. That's why we were trying to do that with your project. So that's the why. The second part, I think this is more important in large corporates, but also in small one like your business, Tamara. It's your time, Tamara. It's the who. Who is the accountable? It's not the project manager. The project manager is responsible of making a plan, defining the requirements. So, but you, the project that you sponsor, the projects that are currently in your organization, you determine the success. So 40% of the success of any project is the time you put on it, Tamara, as an executive. In terms of taking decisions, supporting the PM, providing solutions, being with the PM available. And I think in a small companies, you'll have more access to the people to go faster in these decisions. But in big corporations, executives, which are the PPs, the leaders, you don't see them. You don't see them. They are in the kickoff, but then they disappear. And I think that's right. A big problem. Yeah, the biggest project, they have a strong sponsor at the top of the company, and they're dedicating, I would say, half a day per week on that project, if that's strategic.
Right. It is interesting that you're right. You see them at the start and the end, and then I think sometimes that also creates a, not just a disconnect in engagement and motivation, but also in results, because you need their perspective to check in at milestones. And you miss that when you see them at the beginning and then the end. And then the executive wonders why it didn't turn out the way they had envisioned, but it's because they weren't there to at least give their perspective along the way.
Exactly. You got it. And I think this is one of the biggest changes that need to happen. I believe that project-based work will be the norm in most of the companies, big ones too. About 60-70% of the work will be done project-based to the point that job descriptions will disappear. In large corporates, in small corporates, you will not have job descriptions. You will just have project roles. And the sponsors have to learn that they need to manage their business in a different way, and they're accountable also for being present, taking decisions, supporting the big projects. I'm not saying all the ones, but so that's the second part, the who is the governance and who does what, plus the support from the top. The third one, which is the more comprehensive, the more project management part, is what I call the what, the how, and the when. So it's What do we want to achieve? Can you be specific? Can you define it? Is it a new house that you want? How's the house going to look like? How many floors? Swimming pool? Yes or no? So that's the what. How are you going to build it? Is what techniques are you going to use, and by when needs to be ready? That's the more comprehensive dimension where you need to go deeper in what you want on the project, the resources, and so on. And the last one is where. Where is a dimension which is not specific to the project, but it's about how important is this project. If the project is highly important, it will have more attention, will have better resources. That project will probably be more successful. If your project is priority number 26 in your company, that project will struggle. Even if it's the best project, has the best plan, it will not work. So it's very important to see what's the priority of that project, what kind of support receives from the organization, and that determines a lot the success of projects.
If you are on a team with a project, how do you, I mean, and maybe it's just a matter of leadership or the executive sponsor, how do you make sure your project maintains priority? And I'm asking because one of the things I hear from people, and this is very, particularly when it comes to innovation initiatives, whether that's improvement of a process or a new product idea or kind of how to work together in a more collaborative way, sometimes those things kick off with a lot of energy. And then over time, if that leadership person isn't as involved as you were saying in the beginning, particularly, the prioritization from a company perspective loses steam. So do you have any advice for how do you keep the steam going?
Yeah, I think this is something as well, which is a bit different than we are used to. It's thinking much faster and more focused on the benefits of these initiatives. Traditionally, you would do a project or initiative if only at the end, after 9 months, 12 months, 2 years, you will start thinking about the return that project will bring you. Today, because of the speed, you need to start thinking about the benefits from day one. How can we start already? We build 10%. Can we already sell a bit? Is this agile concepts which apply to projects too? So I think the sooner you can show some sort of change in if you're talking about innovation process, that you see some more innovation and that you see that it's cascading at the rear. Don't wait till the end of the project to show benefits. And that keeps the momentum. If people see some results after 6 weeks, after 3 months, and even if it's small, that keeps, again, the flame into that project. They see the connection with the strategy. There needs to be a shift in the way we look at projects. Is how quickly can we make some benefits? And that will help you to keep the momentum.
I think I just wrote that down, quickly make benefits. I think that's a great piece of advice for all of us on Launch Street, particularly when it comes to things that we know are more long-term in terms of the, you know, the big impact that we're going for. Not to get overly personal, but it's a little bit like weight loss, isn't it? You know, I'd like to at least see the scale move a little bit. I'm not going to lose 40 pounds overnight, or I'm not going to be able to bench press 200 pounds overnight, but I'd like to at least see a little bit of gains along the way. And I think in work, I always call it kind of conference room to launch, because we have an idea, we initiate it, and then suddenly it's not until we hit the launch date, whatever that is, that we judge it as success. But to your point, little milestones. Have you come across any great ways to gauge success, like getting on that scale and seeing 2 pounds that maybe we're not thinking about?
Well, I think maybe I'm not going to answer your question right away, but let me give you an example, Tamara, from a project which I find fantastic, just that people see the perspective on this important of the looking at the benefits. There's a project which I love, which is the cathedral in Barcelona. It's called Sagrada Familia. It's a beautiful kind of Gothic building. That project started in 1882. So it's about 130 years ago, 140 years ago, and it's not finished. It's going to be like an amazing church, the tallest church in Europe, and they plan to finish on 2026. So this is a project which is about more than 100 years late. I went to talk to them for finding out what the hell is going on with this project. I want to know. This is for my book. So I went to talk to them. I went to Barcelona. And I asked the project leader, guys, are you not a little bit ashamed? You are not just one week late or 1 month or 1 year or 10 years, you're 120 years late in your project. And they said, no, Antonio, I'm not ashamed. We're not. And I, you know who's our client? And I said, no, who's your client? Who's your key stakeholder? God is our client. And he's not in a hurry. You're in a hurry.
Oh, so oh, they had it right. We thought it was late.
Exactly.
We're fine with it.
Yeah. And the other lesson I learned here is the project is 120 years late, but they're making millions every day with visitors and events you can visit. They make millions per year. So they're making benefits despite being 100 years late. So how can we achieve that in our projects?
And what a wonderful example of really think about what success looks like. So maybe it's, you know, to your point, like we thought it was late because in our mind, 100 years to do anything is crazy long.
Yeah.
But in their minds, it's all working well. They're making money. Visitors are coming. In fact, I would probably, I've never been, but I would venture to say that the fact that it's in progress is probably part of their story at this point.
Yeah. You're super smart. Yeah, you got it. They don't need to finish. Wow.
Yeah, that's a great example. And for all of us to really think about what are some really not just visible milestones, but ones that really make sense that say we're on track or we're getting what we need out of this project. And that's part of the reason why, Antonio, I really appreciated your canvas is it had me think about things that I hadn't considered when I initiate things like purpose and passion, which we kind of talked about a little bit earlier, but also things like quality. So you have here, how do we ensure that the outcome will meet the quality standards? What a great question to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
I never thought about that.
We forget about testing and we launch. I remember homecare.gov, the website, when it launched, it was a big in the news. It didn't work. So why didn't they test? Why don't you test? So it's just very basic, Tamara, but it has the right questions. If you just answer them, your project will have big chances to make it.
So we've talked a little bit about this throughout the interview, but I'd love to hear your perspective kind of focused on this. Why do you think good project management is so important for, I think, both an individual and a company when it comes to being able to be innovative?
I think they go hand in hand. I think this is like this. Yeah, you cannot be innovative if you are not good at the implementation of the project management. You cannot be good at projects if the innovation is not good, if there's no problem or opportunity. So I think what you're seeing now, there's more and more type of bending between innovation and projects. Mm-hmm. And I'm claiming that project managers should look more into the innovation side because that determines a lot if a project is successful. I'm writing an article with Whitney Johnson. She's an expert on the S-curve on the learning. So trying to see when is the right time to start a project. We often start a project when you're still innovating. You're trying to figure out what you want. And that's why projects take longer or even fail. And an example, Tamara, from the research I've done, the first iPhone, back to the iPhone, the Purple project, the idea of having an iPhone or a smartphone in Apple was presented to Steve Jobs 2001. Steve Jobs said to the team, listen, guys, it's a great idea. The telecom industry, it's amazing, it's growing, but it's not the right time for us. We're focused on the iTunes, we're focused on the iPod, and that's where I want the focus to stay. You guys explore, experiment with the smartphone, and we'll see later. It took him 3 years, so the iPhone project was only launched, established in 2004 November, so 3 years. 3 years took them to play, to innovate, to narrow down the options. And then the project took only 2.5 years to develop a phone. So that 3 years of innovation is fundamental. If you don't have that connection between innovation and projects, you just mix up and things will not work.
So if I hear you right, what you're saying with the iPhone example, it's actually good that he said no, because it forced them to continue to innovate and really hone in what the iPhone was supposed to be before initiating that massive project.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that project, he pulled off most of the best people in Apple and say, you guys now work for 2.5 years on that project. Forget about your day-to-day job. We'll find somebody else to do that.
Right. And, so they were doing that while the rest of the company was doing iTunes.
Exactly. So I think this is already a great lesson. We often start a project with the idea, and that's not good. It will not work. Make sure that there's the innovation process, that you're amazing, Tamara, with your work. That takes place. That is very important.
You know, it's interesting. I also think that having projects, which gives me a little bit of clarity and boundaries, helps me innovate because I know what I'm innovating against. I think oftentimes, you know, we think of innovation just as this big blue sky has never been done stuff. Yeah. But the reality is sometimes innovation is just being smarter about how you do something that's right in front of you, just thinking differently, just a little bit differently. But without those boundaries or lanes, I think it's hard to do, particularly when it comes to, well, to your point, kind of everything's a project. So with all of it, when you have your lanes, you actually know how to innovate.
Right, exactly. Don't have too many lanes either.
Right. Well, that's the other part, right? Because then you've got one limb in one lane, an arm here and a leg there. And
exactly.
I'm curious when you work with clients or maybe in your work too, when they have a million projects going on, what do you do to help them get down to the right ones or to help them see that? Because I bet you if I'm thinking about it in my old kind of corporate days and for our listeners, some of them are going, okay, well, I'm starting with 50 projects. How do I get it to my top three priorities?
Yeah. Well, it's a very simple exercise. I take all the executive team. I tell them, put in a paper on a post-it all the projects that you're working on. And then they start to put that, and they already get shocked when they see the first list. And this is maybe 10, 20% of the total amount of projects that company is running. So just shock them because they don't have that at hand. Mm-hmm. And that's already make them react, say, well, this is... I often see, Tamara, companies which have more projects than employees.
Imagine? Well, that doesn't surprise me at all, to be honest. I think all of us are doing like 3 or 4 at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you work on the priorities. You say, what are, according to you, the top three individually? And then you put them in the flip chart and you'll see, okay, if you have 10 people and you have 30 different priorities, we have an issue of alignment, we have an issue on focus, because every manager has a different priority. If you do the exercise and you come with 6, 7 priorities, then that company is aligned, that company is focused, they know where the priorities are. So it's kind of very simple exercise, just everybody works on their own, on what they think is priority projects, and then you put that in a flip chart. Mm-hmm. And I recommend every company and startup to work on that, and you'll get shock or not shock, or find the ways to work on looking at your top three projects, well staffed, well managed, can be successful.
You know, I bet that would be a great, first of all, it's a great exercise for all of us to do. And if you're trying to get buy-in to get some stuff off your plate or maybe put some more effort in one area, what a great way to go, like, say, come into my office and then just have this wall of post-it notes of all the projects you're working on. Say, great, this is my workload. Because I think when we put it on paper in bullets, it doesn't have that same impact to really understand how many different things are going on.
Absolutely. I think you're giving me good ideas, Tamara. I love
We're innovating on the spot. Yeah. Before we close out, where can people go to learn more and connect with you, get the book?
I think the best is to go to my website, antonionietorodriguez.com. LinkedIn, of course, it's easy to... Nowadays, I tend to reply quite quickly. LinkedIn, the problem, you know, you have 30,000 limit connections, so it's hard to get connected, but otherwise, Gmail... or website. I'm really happy to listen from other people, give advice. I'm very active.
Excellent. So this is so good. This has been so great. What's your final piece of advice for innovators on Launch Street trying to be better product managers? I'm going to just say of their life, because I think it all, to your point, is a project.
I think they should take the time to study a bit the basics. I'm not asking them to become certified project managers, but try to understand the basics. Just maybe having a look at my canvas is one page, and use it. Start to apply it, and it will really give you more clarity on the projects that you carry, whether they make sense or not. So I would really encourage people to learn a little bit of projects and how they work, the complexity, and how they can be better. And I'm sure they will do much better and have a happy life.
I am really looking forward to putting some of these, the Canvas tools into action. Because I think, you know, as you were saying that, I was realizing that I probably, when we initiate something, I focus on that what, how, when section of your Canvas.
Yeah.
But I don't spend nearly enough time on the why, the who, and the where.
Yes.
And at the end of the day, those are really the keys that you need for the success of the what, who, and what, how, and when. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that. I just have to ask this because it was in your bio and I meant to ask it earlier. What 5 languages are you fluent in?
Well, I'm natural Spanish from Madrid.
Yeah.
And then English, French, Italian, German, and a bit of Dutch. I don't know how many languages there were. Yeah. But I'm not because I'm amazing or very smart. It's just because I lived in these countries.
And I love it when you're, I was just curious about which languages. I assume Spanish and English. I had those two and I figured German,
really?
Actually. Yeah.
Hablas español?
I don't know. But hopefully my kids will. That's
okay.
The goal.
Very
yeah,
nice.
It was a great language to know. So Antonio, thank you so much for joining me. This has been really enlightening. And I think a really, for Launch Street, for all of us, just a powerful way to think about how to get the things we want to get done. I mean, we are all trying to be innovative and make an impact. And this is a tool for us to do that. So thank you.
Thank you, Tamara. Pleasure. And thanks for all the work you do on this space. Thank you.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.